Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Texans training camp is happening now. We'll talk some more Texans in the next segment. In fact, Seth Payne, the radio host, is going to call Seth Payne, the player, a liar in the next segment. We'll get to that in about
can't trust that guy.
15 minutes. No. Guy was a cheat, man.
I'm looking at it. I found an old article, and I'm lying in it. I lied to the media. I lied to whoever wrote that article. It's probably John McClain.
So we'll hit that in the next segment. In the meantime, the big story today is the Astros brawl with the A's yesterday. We're 15 games into the season, and the Astros already have two beanball-related brawls, or at least bench-clearing incidents with other teams. This was much closer to a brawl than the Dodger one. The Dodger one was just a bunch of guys not really social distancing and yelling and hollering at each other. This one had actual physicality with Castellano. Is that the name of the rookie pitcher for the Astros? I forget. He threw an off-speed pitch right in between the shoulder blades of Laureano, the center fielder for the A's, a former Astros farmhand. And that led to Alex Cintron, the Astros hitting coach, reportedly screaming at Laureano from the dugout. Laureano had enough of it. He ran towards the Astros dugout, and a big Donnybrook occurred.
Well, and remember, Laureano was showing Castellanos how to throw the pitch. He was showing his actual hand there. Yeah,
yeah, he was going.
He was the one that was being the extreme aggressor early on. Like he was upset because he'd been hit twice in the same game, and nobody's trying to send a message to Laureano. It was a 3-2 curveball.
Right,
just settle the hell down, Laureano.
Right. Well, and to read Twitter, you'd think that Cintron is going to be banned from the game, you know, because he was yelling at a player from the dugout. Here is Dusty Baker when he was asked, hey, what's the deal with coaches? Where do you come out on coaches yelling at players from the dugout?
I've chirped at players before myself, you know, or guys always say, well, is it inappropriate for a coach to chirp at a guy? But are you supposed to just sit there and take it too? You know, I mean, you know, it's in the heat of the moment. You know, we're all men out there, you know, with high pride and anxiety and everything else. So, I mean, these things happen when you're on a baseball field. I mean, everybody wants you to just control your temper, which you should, but sometimes things flare out of control.
Dusty could not have answered that in any other way than it's okay to do that because he was caught on camera doing it to Joe Kelly a week ago.
Right, yeah.
That's get on the mound, you little bleeper!
I was kind of hoping he was going to bring up Joe Kelly by name.
Yes. Like,
I don't know if that's the right strategy here. Now the Astros, if anything, the Astros are trying to displace their reputation as cheaters with a reputation as the coaches who mix crap up.
Right.
Let's go. Look, the thing about the Astros coaches though is if they start the crap, they'll finish the crap. Does anybody doubt for a second that Dusty Baker could beat the crap out of Joe Kelly if they got into an actual fight? I mean, like, Dusty Baker would break him over his knee, you know, and then throw the pieces to the wolves. It would be disgusting.
I feel bad for Cintron because, as we know, Dustin Garneau, the backup catcher, tackled Laureano before he could get to Cintron. And it looked like Cintron was kind of waiting there for Laureano to get there. It's been portrayed as Cintron was hiding behind his players, whereas I feel like it was more Garneau being proactive in tackling Laureano to make sure that it didn't turn into a full-scale war out there.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell they were talking about hiding behind the players there. Yeah. Like, he got tackled. Laureano got tackled, and then all hell broke loose and everything was... Yeah, like, Cintron, Look, I'll tell you this about Cintron, just watching the exchange. Cintron was not scared one bit of Laureano. You know, like, it was so far from it. And Laureano was being a D-bag, right? Yeah. Like, he's not acting like you're, okay, Laureano, I know you're a nice young story, and I know, look, the only reason you would possibly be getting hit, though, is that if it was somehow weird retribution for the 2017 cheating scandal, since you were a member of the Astros organization at that point.
Well, to insult Cintron about the way he handled that whole thing by just sort of laying back after Garneau tackled him would be to say that you would have to compliment him if he were to go, hey, guys, clear out. I'm ready to take this guy. Like, if he were to split the Red Sea and go, let's go, Laureano, like, put his fists up, like, put his dukes up. You know what I mean? Like, that's – what do you want him to do? Do you want him to then – if you're saying that he's hiding behind the players, then what, and you're insulting him for that, or you're criticizing him for that, then what you're saying is you'd have rather he go fight Laureano, the hitting coach of the Astros. You'd rather he have told everybody to back away so he could get into a fist fight with a player.
Look, this is where it is with the Astros right now. It's anytime anything like this happens, before anybody has even seen anything or thought about it, immediately they're going to take the other team's side.
Yes.
And it's just, that's the flat-out truth of the matter, is that it's not even worth getting into the logical arguments with anybody about it. This clown from Oakland, this newspaper writer that said this, Astros coach should get at least double Laureano's suspension. Rest of season would be justified. In position of leadership was instigator. Okay, wait a second. So Cintron said some mean words. Laureano comes and tries to physically assault him, and somehow the lesser crime is the physical assault. Sean, that's a weird thing for a newspaper columnist to say.
It is.
Because their whole job is to say mean words. So basically, that guy's saying that if somebody attacks him for his mean words, the lesser crime is the physical attack, and his mean words were the greater crime.
Right, right. No, may God have mercy on your soul, McDonald, if Laureano's batting 176 for the month of September and you say something bad about him in a column and he sees you in the stadium somewhere and he makes a run at you. But let me ask you this. Are there words that Cintron could have said where it would have been justified for Laureano to run at the dugout? Because there were rumors of that after the game.
That he had said something about, what is his madre in Spanish? Tu madre. He said something about tu madre.
Yeah.
But whatever he said about his madre, it was...
That was a rumor.
Yeah, yeah. Are those fighting words? I don't know. Like, that's, look, generally in society at this point in time, like, if any judge, arbitrator, or commissioner looks at a situation, there's nobody that says, like, oh, you insulted his mother. Well, you had what was coming to you. Like, that's just, they're just talking smack, right?
Right.
That doesn't, like, they're going to get fined. Now, should Cintron be in that situation? Probably not, but it's not the same as, oh, well, he said something about his mother, so let's see, it's 2020. I guess the guy that attacked him was in the right and Cintron is in the wrong.
Yeah. No.
Plus, as previously discussed, Laureano was very smugly trying to show Castellanos how to grip the ball the right way.
Yeah.
And it was like he was out of control. He was being restrained by his own teammates at that point, and everybody's acting like somehow Cintron was the instigator.
Yeah.
Where Laureano was making a huge big show out of everything. Let's settle the hell down. I got people coming at me and telling me, like, well, if you watch, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not like you. I didn't make my opinion up before you even looked at anything. Yeah, I watched the whole damn thing. Laureano was acting like a little emo boy because he was upset that he got hit, kind of, in the back.
You do know that Cintron was saying things in the dugout. That's basically what they dropped a "you do know" on you, Seth, is what they did.
But he was saying mean things to him, and if mean things happen, then of course he should run at him.
The bigger problem is,
this is the thing. This is always the key distinction. Does Cintron actually know Laureano's madre? If he actually knows the madre, then all of a sudden it becomes a personal insult.
Hated his madre.
If I'm the arbitrator, you know, listening to these two, that's going to be my first question.
Yeah,
I'll be Cintron. Do you know his madre?
Right, right.
You don't know his madre.
What is the
relationship? Then why is he getting so sensitive?
Right.
Like, what is? Is he 13? Are we in a bar at 3 a.m.? What's going on?
Old newspaper clippings have Seth Payne, the radio host, wanting to call out Seth Payne, the player from back in the day, as a liar. A liar. We will have the evidence for you next. So, Seth, you were doing some sleuthing yesterday, and apparently it's really been weighing on your mind lately just how big a liar you used to be as a player, because you, the radio host, went and found an old article.
I didn't know, to be clear, I was just going through. I was throwing out some old stuff, and I stumbled across this article. I wasn't sleuthing. This is like in a scrapbook.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah, and it was just a reminder of... It was an old article from 2003 written by Carlton Thompson in the Chronicle.
Carlton Thompson.
Yeah, yeah. And I just it made me think and wonder, and this is why whenever a player like Dylan Cole, who had an ACL last year, is put on the PUP list, there's a part of me that gets a little bit nervous, because it was a reminder of what I'd gone through with my ACL injury in 2003 and how much I lied about it to the press when things weren't going so hot afterwards.
Okay, so here the headline reads... Pain's recovery pushed back. This was the headline. You can tell, Seth, by the size of the font and the width of it, this was the lead story in the Chronicle that day.
Well, this is I had torn my ACL in September of 2003, and then this article was on December 23rd of 2003.
Wow.
So this is a few months after... This is three and a half months probably after my injury, where a lot of people would already be running and everything by that point.
The headline reads, Pain's recovery pushback. The subheadline reads, Texan needs third surgery on his knee. And the article leads in with, as the Texans search for positives in the wake of Seth Payne's season-ending knee injury, they could cling to the fact that it happened early enough, week two at New Orleans, that it seemed realistic to expect he could be cleared for full participation in next year's training camp. Think again, is what it says. Fittingly, in a season during which the Texans have caught very few breaks in the injury department, it doesn't appear Payne's rehab will follow the original script.
Yeah.
So was there a PUP list back in the day in 2004? Did you get thrown on the
PUP list? I don't
know.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think I was I don't even remember. I didn't learn what a PUP list was until I got into radio.
Gotcha.
Honestly. I never paid attention to exactly what the serious designations were.
It may not have
existed. I came back and practiced. It was kind of a minor miracle that I played all 16 games the next season, because this point in the article, they quote me as saying, we had a couple little setbacks, but I don't think it's anything serious. They took care of it. I really don't think it's a big
deal.
That's
the big lie, Sean, right there.
Sean, at that point, I can remember as late as January of that year having an emotional breakdown because I was pretty certain that my career was over. I thought I was done because they couldn't figure out what was going on with my knee. I ended up having 5 procedures on it. I had to redo the ACL repair including taking the tendon from my right knee to put it in my left knee.
Wow.
The patellar tendon from my right knee to put it in my left knee. So it was all kinds of complications and everything. So it was, by the time we got to August, I was still very much touch and go, and they were being very, very careful with me, and I wasn't the same guy. So that's why whenever a guy is coming back from an ACL, I think sometimes there's a tendency these days for people to just think, oh, ACL, no big deal. Sometimes it's kind of a big deal. Now, I'm not trying to be an alarmist or anything. I really like Dylan Cole, and I have zero reason to believe he's had complications or anything, but he is on the PUP, and the Texans are bringing in other inside linebackers right this moment, some of them aging inside linebackers.
Who've been injured.
Like Brandon Marshall. But yeah, banged up aging inside linebackers right now. So it would be a relatively somewhere between minor and major blow to the Texans if Dylan Cole weren't back. He offers a lot on special teams, but then also as a sub inside linebacker, he's got a whole lot of potential in the future. And it would just be a shame if his recovery is delayed.
It would. You know, look, the ACL's it's different. You know, it's different than it was back in 2003 when you suffered an ACL, Seth. It doesn't seem to be the long-term, you know, the recovery.
It wasn't a big deal back then, though.
It wasn't okay.
It's been 20 years now where ACLs are recovered from pretty quickly. This is just complications do occur and setbacks do occur.
I only bring that up because the Texans have had at least one ACL injury that a big-time player has been coming back. And, you know, Dylan Cole is not a big-time player, but he's an important piece on defense and special teams. He's a special teams captain. But Will Fuller came back last year. He was fine off the ACL. And then Deshaun Watson the year before had an ACL, and he came back and he was fine. Do you remember where you gave this quote, Seth, where you just lied so vociferously here? We had a couple little setbacks, but I don't think it's anything serious. They took care of it. I really don't think it's a big deal. When it actually was a big deal, was that in a press conference or a media scrum, or was it over the phone with Carlton? I'm just wondering because you said you were I only asked that because you said it was a pretty emotional time for you, knowing that it really was kind of a big deal. I'm wondering if it was actually in front of people or over the phone.
No, I don't think so. It was probably just. I think it was probably. I don't know when they would have gotten a hold of me or anything. I stayed the hell away from the media when I was injured like that. Yeah. So he probably just called me.
Yeah.
Where's Carlton now?
I don't know. That's a good question. 713-572-4610. Let us know where he is.
None of you told me whether I was allowed to say that slur, that Spanish slur for prostitute on air or not, but I'm sure 20 of you will tell me where Carlton Thompson is.
Right, right. Text message. This goes back to us talking about storylines for the Texans heading into the season. Return game. Text message saying, Kiki QT can take that job easy. He's quick, he's fast, he's always been dangerous. We need that X factor because we've never cared about special teams. If I'm the coach on the opposite team, I don't fear the punt returner, kick returner, because the Texans don't have a great returner. QT can, and I'd like him to be that guy. Fuller needs to stay healthy and earn his wide receiver spot and show some durability. I agree with some of that. I don't necessarily agree with the part that they've never cared about special teams. I think they care deeply about it the last couple of years. I do think they need a more dangerous return guy than DeAndre Carter. DeAndre Carter's not consistent enough just doing what you said, Seth, catching the football and hanging on to the football. He's not consistent enough doing that to where his averaging 7 yards a return is enough. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right. And if you have a starter who can do it, a la Wes Welker or somebody like that, then I think it's worth doing it unless that starter is Will Fuller. I just don't want Will Fuller to take any extra reps or anything more than he needs to. Kickoff return especially has become such a moot point that kickoff return unless the NFL institutes the changes like the XFL had done, RIP. The XFL is reawakening, I forgot.
Yeah.
Probably not this year.
We don't know when,
someday.
But yeah.
Then it's punt return is the only thing that really matters. At this point, I'd rather see Brandon Cooks than DeAndre Carter. I feel like I'd feel some electricity out of Brandon Cooks.
You'd rather have Cooks back there than Fuller? The some of those hits that those punt returners take.
Cooks is he's healthy. He's missed two games since 2015.
Okay.
Has he had a few concussions?
So you're drinking the Cooks concussion Kool-Aid then?
I'm drinking. What Kool-Aid is that?
Well, the Kool-Aid that he's had four concussions in the last couple of years, but he's like, no big deal. And the Texans are like, no big deal.
I don't know. I don't know what happened last year. Every time they talk about last year's concussions, for which he missed no games, it's kind of talked about almost. And I know people there in with the Rams, I don't know. I just hear chatter that maybe it was somehow blown up to be more than it was. I don't know how that works in the concussion protocol. I don't want the cancel police to come after me for diminishing the importance or severity of a concussion. There's smoke there, and I can't quite figure out what that smoke is.
Seth, they talk. I'm not saying this is the case, but they talk like there is a special kind of concussion that Brandon Cooks got that's really no big deal going
forward.
They talk
like there was a misdiagnosis or something
maybe.
Is the way they kind of talk. But I don't know how that works within the current concussion protocol. It seems like it would be hard to do.
This is another text message. This goes back to the rookies. I saw this little show on Snapchat about incoming NFL rookies, and Blacklock was on there. The other player said he was a true leader and the guy constantly pushing the others and leading by example. Really good stuff to hear. That aligns with the stuff we've heard about Ross Blacklock.
Yeah.
In terms of his makeup.
It seems like I'd say at least four of the rookies, I've heard people just gush about their maturity and all of that. John Reed is the one that I think I've seen John Reed mentioned by a lot of draftnik types and a lot of people outside the city of Houston as, hey, keep an eye on this guy. He's a really heady player, and he's got that quickness. So his combine numbers don't really demonstrate how quick he is. A lot of times combine numbers are great for showing guys who are fast, where John Reed is very, very quick. And when you start talking about covering slot receivers, he might actually provide some benefit to this team this year.
You were on Weaver's conference call like I was the other day. And when John Reed's name came up on that conference call, Weaver doesn't strike me as a guy who would throw shade at rookies just to haze them at all. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's going to be a guy who would express a slow development of a player. But I also don't think that he would be a guy who would seemingly gush about somebody, especially a fourth-round pick who hasn't even put on pads yet, unless it was warranted. And again, like you said, Seth, all these guys have done so far is take notes and probably do some walkthroughs and things like that. But my guess is some of that is based on Weaver being part of the evaluation of them getting him in the fourth round and feeling like, man, we might have gotten a steal in the fourth round with this guy.
His John Reed, when you look at there's like these things, these spider charts that show where players are, like their measurable skills compared to others, and it shows it shows color where they're good at things or the when you look at a lot of the things like 40 time or vertical leap or just his actual physical size, John Reed does not score well at all in those things. But when it comes to like the 20 yard shuttle or the broad jump, he does really, really well. Some of those just really the explosive short area type stuff. That's where I think the upside is with him, which is perfect for a slot corner, right? You don't necessarily need a guy that is going to be your every down guy, but he can play safety, he can play corner. I like this kid. I like this prospect.
What is wrong with Jose Altuve? Dusty Baker asked it. By the way, Seth, Carlton Thompson, according to the text page, an editor at MLB.com. So moving on up. Nice job, Carlton
where
Thompson.
Where is he?
He's an editor at MLB.com.
Oh, okay.
Good for him.
Ask him if he knew I was lying.
That's. We'll get his number. You can go ask him. What is wrong with Jose Altuve? Dusty Baker was asked that in his post-game press conference yesterday. We'll hear from the Astros manager next. Yeah, I will be out there today for the first round of media COVID testing, and I'm anxious to get out there and just see what the whole operation looks like. You know, we know what it normally looks like. There's the bubble. There's some practice fields. Maybe a scissor lift where they're filming things, and then you know, guys walk back and forth over to the stadium. There's been all kinds of talk, Seth, about how this could look different, not only from a functional standpoint during practice, obviously, but where the players might be changing, where they might be housing themselves up. You know, could they put a tent over near the bubble where that becomes a de facto locker room because they've got to keep off. You know, they've got to keep players in smaller groups. We already know they're using the bubble to do film study with a big screen in there, as opposed to having them all kind of cramped into meeting rooms and stuff. So I don't know how much of it I'll get to see, but I'm very anxious to see what I'm able to is what this operation looks like out there.
Yeah, this is one of the things that caught me by surprise was that even as much as they're spaced out at the facility, after they're finished with their physical work, they go home and have their Zoom meetings at home. So they're still working remotely, even though they could be doing their evening meetings, you know, at the stadium like you usually do, or in meeting rooms or at the bubble, whatever it might be. They're actually separating even further and doing them from home, which I don't know. It might be it's just a different setup than you traditionally have.
I think it says a lot about the trust level in these players to do the right thing off the field that they would send them home to do something that they normally could do and observe them social distancing in the stadium. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Or also, you know what I wonder about too, Sean? If for the guys that are staying at the team hotel, that hotel Wi-Fi typically sucks. That's a whole lot of video load on the on a hotel Wi-Fi. I did our show from a hotel once. I did do it remotely. And I ended up paying like conference fees to get actual dedicated internet.
I remember that. Yeah. That was a killer connection.
It was like $300. Yeah, it was a nice connection, but it was $300.
Was it worth it?
It was worth it. I kind of wish I should have called a conference for afterwards. Like, I should have had a bunch of doctors come in and talked about, I don't know, COVID or something like that.
You should have sold timeshares right after.
I've got the conference room. It was awesome because it was during this time of COVID. So nobody was having, I was the only person there.
Yeah.
And like all of the hotel staff was just thrilled to have somebody using one of their conference rooms. I had a big conference table out in front of me. I had a platter of treats brought to me and everything. It was pretty cool. And I told them I was a CEO of some company name that I made up.
Did
it
you
was,
really?
I was treated like a bigwig. Yeah.
You
it wasn't even a made up. It was fitjoint.com. So that actually is my domain.
Oh, there you go. There you go. You probably could have, not to give you buyer's remorse, my guess is if there were that few people at the hotel, you might have been able to get them off of the $300 tab.
I know, but it was like the eighth place I'd called, and I was like driving while I was doing it, and they could do it. So that actually was a $50 discount.
Gotcha.
The problem was I should have said, The problem is I didn't. I told them actually that I worked for Entercom and everything. So then they feel like they're dealing with a company. And I explained. I was like, listen, I'm not. I'm paying for this out of my own pocket. Yeah. Could you do me a solid? They could not.
Dusty Baker was asked after the game last night. Jose Altuve, who looks broken right now. He's making errors in the field. He's hitting under 200. He's striking out. His body language is awful. He just does not look like the usual Jose Altuve. Dusty Baker asked after the game, what's wrong with Jose Altuve?
His balance is off a little bit. You know, he's either early or late and, you know, not seeing the ball like Altuve usually, you know, sees the ball. I mean, this guy has great vision. You know, he's pulling off the ball a little bit and he's falling off pitches that he usually puts into play, you know, which puts him in a two-strike situation and it's too hard to you know, to hit all time with two strikes. And so, you know, we just got to get him focused and relaxed. And, you know, I'm hoping, like I said, to get back home to be good for him.
Seth, there's a text message, someone saying, I think Altuve is suffering from being wrongfully accused. It weighs on a person. Look, Jose Altuve is the only one who really knows what Jose Altuve is suffering from right now. He's the only one that's inside his own brain. I think the text is perfectly plausible, though. He is not just at the plate, just he's conducting himself right now like somebody who's distracted.
Yeah. It's so hard in this compressed season to not jump to conclusions. Oh, look, and Altuve's had slumps before, right? It's just that when it's at the beginning of the season, there's nothing to lessen the blow to your batting average and how that looks. There's just no hiding from it. It's not just some midseason 15 game slump. It's been really, really hard to watch. And it's impossible not to speculate as to, okay, the fact that Altuve has been treated as the face of this scandal, even though he is very much being wrongfully accused of that, how much does that weigh in? Think about your kids. Think about when your kid gets falsely accused of something. Because I don't. My wife is she's much more the disciplinarian, Sean, mm-hmm. and she's kind of diabolical in how
I can
she
see
does
that.
It.
Yeah.
To where she might throw out a false accusation or something every now and
sure.
then. And I see the look on my daughter's face of like panic and just how distraught they are that they're being falsely accused. And that's a natural human reaction. It's almost worse to be falsely accused of something than it is to be accurately accused of something.
Oh yeah.
At least if you're accurately accused of something, you're either going to confess to it or you're going to be adamantly deny it, you know, and just be a complete scoundrel. With Jose Altuve, he's tried to do things the right way. He's admitted that he should have stopped it. He got up and was one of the two players that actually gave the public apology, which unfortunately was not well-crafted and was horribly received. And yet, it's his face, it's his picture, it's his mannequin that Dodgers fans are having their kids throw at the head of the mannequin. It's like all of these things that have turned him into a villain, and he is about like the least villainous human being I've ever met or seen in professional sports. That's really, really hard. I genuinely feel for him. I don't know if it has anything to do with his current slump or not, but I just genuinely feel that he's having to bear the burden of all of this, and that the rest of baseball is convinced he was wearing a buzzer and all of this other nonsense. That's a big cross to bear.
He's the easiest one to create this narrative with, right? Because he was the most, and to me, still is the most likable player on the team. He's an underdog story. He's, you know, awesome in the community. He was a guy who was here when this team was the dregs of sports, not just baseball, of professional sports. He was here for that. He was here before that even. Like he got here in 2011. So he was here through the bad years. So he's a guy who you can get behind his story and all that. And so it's easy to create the narrative that he's feeling the weight of all this because he was so well liked. And I think among Astro fans still is. I think the other thing, Seth, is if this were happening with Jose Altuve and they were even 9-6 instead of 6-9, it wouldn't be getting as much attention. The fact that the team is a circus right now, that the bullpen is a parade of rookies, there's injuries that are ravaging the pitching staff, that Jose Altuve is not alone among the star players who are slumping, I think adds to just this cesspool that this team is right now. So that story of Jose Altuve, I think, picks up steam. If they were winning baseball games, it would be like, all right, we'll just wait and see. We'll wait for Jose Altuve to hit.
I don't want to be the person that's panicking too much because of a slow start, but it's a short season. There is no saying, well, hey, that's just baseball, or don't you watch baseball? Yes, I watch baseball, and I've never seen a situation quite like the Astros are in right now. I've never lived through a massive cheating scandal that focused on and villainized my particular team. So I've never seen this. I don't feel like all my other experiences in a lifetime of watching baseball are necessarily relevant to what's going on right now. A couple of listeners say the entire team is missing something, absolutely no swag.
Yeah.
Somebody else says they're playing like a dog with its tail between its legs. And, you know, this weekend, Brandy asked me, has Bregman, after Bregman's last home run, which was Friday?
That was Friday, yes.
Friday.
Friday or Thursday? I can't remember.
She asked, has he brought back the stare, or are they doing any celebrations in the dugout? And for the life of me, help me out on the text line, 713-572-4610. I haven't seen or noticed the stare. Maybe I haven't been looking close enough. Any of the celebrations have been done in by the COVID virus, unfortunately, but they haven't even necessarily done any, like, choreographed celebrations from a safe social distance, right? It's very subdued in that dugout compared to what you're typically accustomed to with the Astros. And part of that, whether you want to call it swag or just love of the game, let's call it that. Let's call it love of the game. Because some of that pure enjoyment that you used to see, that used to be their trademark, you just don't see anymore. And I don't know how much of it is COVID. I don't know how much of it is playing under this umbrella of scrutiny from the rest of the league or a feeling that they have to be contrite. I don't know, but it just doesn't feel like the Astros.
And wasn't that part of the reason why Dusty Baker was brought in? Like, to be sort of that swag shield for this team that was going to be scorned by everybody around baseball and was going to get booed on the road? Like, where?
I don't know if it was a swag shield. I thought it was going to be more of like the grandfatherly guiding hand. I don't know if it was, hey, we're going to be instigating fights from the dugout.
Yeah, probably not.
Or fake dugout, as it is in Oakland. Yeah. Can't even afford a real dugout.
Yeah, when your hitting coach is the one with the most swag, your team's in a little bit of trouble.
Look, I'll back up Cintron on this. I feel like Laureano was trying to act like a big man, and Cintron might have yelled some stuff, and then Laureano decided to go after a coach instead of a player. Fine, whatever. But it is also, this is the second time where there have been kind of an altercation between two dugouts where it started with, or at least part of it was a coach talking smack to the player in question. You know, right before all the Joe Kelly stuff, Dusty Baker was telling him to get back on the mound, you little bleeper. Like, so that's, I don't know if that's why Dusty Baker was brought in to bring that kind of swag to it.
It was Thursday Bregman hit the home run. That was the game, Seth, where he hit the home run in the, I forget if it was top of the eighth or top of the ninth, but they took a 4-3 lead, and then Presley came in and got nobody out.
Yeah.
And gave up the two runs in the bottom of the ninth.
Oh, gosh. And then what, bases loaded yesterday. So many runners left in scoring position on this team. Which is another thing that you should feel good about in terms of them swinging back. Like, the pendulum will swing back with the bats. The bats are going to come back. I don't know what's going on with Altuve. I can't accurately predict that Altuve is going to come back because I feel like he's being falsely accused and put up as the face of all of this, and that's a whole lot of stress on a guy's shoulders. But as far as the rest of the lineup, they're gonna come back. You know, Yuli's not gonna be the only person that's out there playing offensive baseball for the rest of the season.
All right, let's do some headlines here, Ben.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, we just got done talking about Jose Altuve. The big story with the Astros coming off of yesterday's game was the beanball-incited scuffle between the Astros and the Oakland A's yesterday afternoon. Ramon Laureano, the center fielder for the A's, beaned three times during the series, the third time happening late in the game yesterday. That was enough for him. He heard some yapping from Alex Cintron, the Astros hitting coach. Laureano, we should point out, was making some throwing motions at Castellanos, the Astros rookie pitcher, I guess giving him lessons on how he should throw his slider since it wound up beaning Laureano in between the numbers on his back. So there was a lot of trash talk going on back and forth, some on the field, some from the Astros dugout. The bottom line was Laureano saw fit just take a run right at everybody in the Astros dugout. I'm wondering what was going to happen if everybody actually was going to start swinging fists. Was this going to be an 8-on-1 beatdown of him? Or
I don't know. I think it would have been, for one, like, we know how these go in brawls, like quote-unquote brawls these days in baseball. There might be two guys exchanging blows and everybody else is either a bystander or trying to break it up.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're shoving somebody else. Or maybe, and this is what I advise everybody to do, find somebody that you actually know and like on the other side and just make a good show
of
it.
Them. They do that in hockey all the time.
Yeah. It's always fun.
They have agreements.
A little smirk in your eye.
They have agreements before the game. Like, look, I know it's chippy between our two teams. If the bench is clear, let's just you and I go over here and hold each other's jerseys.
Oh, hey, let me take a little quick aside, but this is involved. But let's talk about Anthony Weaver for a little bit. I don't know if Anthony would want me telling this story because he's, you know, now he's a respectable. He's respectable. He's got, you know, he's got clout and everything.
Yeah.
As a player, Anthony came over from Baltimore, and I really liked and appreciated him being there because, you know, we'd lost Gary Walker, and we'd lost, at that point, Robert wasn't there anymore. So we'd lost, like, both those guys are pretty tough dudes, you know, kind of like, don't take no crap from nobody. Weaver came in, and I remember one of the first times, you know, in Baltimore, the offensive and defensive line, this is old school, back in the day, they used to fight a lot. And they had, they had Kelly Gregg, that nose tackle, who was like a national champion wrestler.
Oh,
in college,
yeah.
And an actual MMA fighter, like trained MMA and everything. Like, that dude was a badass. And I remember the first time there was any kind of a scuffle with a defensive lineman in practice, Weaver was pissed that the rest of the defensive line didn't jump in immediately. And he was like, listen, we do that. And I was like, okay, I felt a little guilty myself because I was like, dude, it's hot out. I wouldn't have I was like, hey, Weave, I was over getting water, man. but that was Weaver as a player. He wouldn't do that as a coach now, and times have changed. The fighting's not encouraged like it used to be. That was kind of one of those things, like, you know, if there's a defensive lineman in a fight, you're joining in. Everybody get out there. Kids, don't do that. We don't do that anymore. But likewise, with that rumble yesterday, the question is, what would have happened if Garneau hadn't tackled Laureano?
Yes, that's where I'm going with it.
And another quick aside, could there be any better or more colorful names involved in this melee? We've got a Laureano, we've got a Garneau, we've got a Cintrone.
Castellanos who threw the pitch.
This is all epic stuff. Those are awesome names. So Garneau comes in and does a – it was a nice – I don't want to call it a form tackle. It was more of a lasso than it was a tackle. But he secures the tackle. And can we ask for more than that? What would have happened if he hadn't done that? I mean, a lot of people are accusing Cintrone. We've had a few people on the text line accusing Cintrone of backing up and hiding behind his players. I don't see it that way. I don't think there was really a chance at that point because Garneau tackled Laureano and then a few other guys jumped in. And Cintrone just kind of shuffled and stood there. You do also have to remember that even though he was talking smack, at that point, if I put myself in Cintrone's shoes, I'm a coach. I can't be jumping on. It's one thing to get in, it's bad enough to get in a fight with a player, but I definitely can't be jumping on a dude who's already being restrained by one of my own. Like, I don't know exactly what Cintrone's supposed to do there. Like, you can't jump on a guy that's being restrained. That's a bad, bad look.
All right, Seth, who gets a longer suspension, Cintrone or Laureano?
I think Cintrone does.
Yeah, I think he does, too.
No, I'm sorry. I think Laureano gets the longer suspension.
Do you?
Laureano's charging the dugout, man. I know Cintrone was doing the little, like, come and get some, big boy, tu madre. He supposedly said something about El Madre.
Yeah,
I don't know.
What are the odds that Major League Baseball is looking to find out what he said? And that matters in the... Laureano's going to get suspended. I'm not justifying what he did. I'm trying to figure out what the level of suspension is going to be. And I do wonder if he said something that was more charged than something else you could say, if that's going to factor into the suspensions.
This is where we're going to need to bring Lopez in, because Jose de Jesus Ortiz, who used to work here in Houston, now he covers the Royals, I believe. Jose de Jesus Ortiz is the one that first reported that maybe Cintrone said something about Laureano's madre.
Yeah.
And Jose de Jesus Ortiz said, hey, in Latin culture, you know, that's not taken lightly. So I don't want to speak out of turn here or start, you know, maybe when Lopez comes in later, we'll talk to him about just that. So maybe whichever person hears this case, maybe it'll affect, maybe, I don't know if that factors into it or not. The fact of the matter is, these days, any kind of authority figure can't, like, the person ruling on this case can't say, like, oh, well, that attack was warranted because you said mean words. Yeah. Like, that's not the way we operate anymore.
Seth, I'm not trying to invade your headspace. I'm just trying to let you get mentally prepared. You do know that at 8:35 we're going to do the Circle of Trust for the Astros.
Son of a...
And Jose Altuve's name is going to come up again.
What was the official verdict last week?
Let the fans vote on it, and they resoundingly kept him in.
Well, this is a problem with letting the fans vote, though, too, Sean. This is a hard job. It's a hard job ruling on the Circle of Trust, and sometimes you got to do things that you don't feel good about. You know, it's just like Judge Smales, sentences that kid to the death chair for his own good. Like, sometimes you got to take some guys out of the Circle of Trust for their own good.
No, our fictional Circle of Trust is the exact same thing. Absolutely. Yeah. Next headline, the MAC, the Mid-American Conference, has canceled their football season. That came down Saturday morning. That's big news if you have a kid that plays in the MAC, or you're an alumnus of a school in the MAC, or if you're a degenerate gambler. Like me, that likes to gamble on MAC football, is big news. Little did people know it would become big news as far as a possible tremor that would get the Power 5 teetering on the brink of not having college football this year. The Big Ten immediately had a conference call right after that in which they made an announcement that they weren't going to be doing any hitting in practice, and they're stepping back to take a look at having a season. The Big Ten had another follow-up call yesterday. They're having meetings almost around the clock, it sounds like, to figure out whether or not to play this college football season. The Big Ten seems to be the Power 5 conference, Seth, that's closest to shutting it down for the fall. It sounds like, according to reports, they're really just waiting for another conference to join in with them. They don't want to be the only ones to walk out to the end of the plank. It seems like political figures, authority figures in the southern states, like the SEC and the ACC, are more gung-ho about having a season. Seth, everything that is at the root of what makes college football dysfunctional has been on display for the last 48 hours. All the disjointed leadership, lack of leadership, different agendas, players' voices being heard or not heard. This story has a little bit of everything in it, and we teeter on the brink of no college football this year.
Well, and I think the biggest obstacle for college football in general is that each institution is its own little environment, you know, and some campuses have a bunch of students, some don't, some have more resources financially than others do. The problem is that all it takes is a few of those cards to fall for the entire house to fall down. And it's getting hard at this moment to see how some of these schools are necessarily going to make it, especially if depending on what the pressure is from the faculty, what the pressure is from just even a select few student-athletes' parents, I think you think about the way they're wired at educational institutions, and it's probably not going to work out. I can't remember. I was pretty optimistic about this not too long ago, but now it just seems like it's inevitable in some respects.
Yeah, we'll see. A lot of the players speaking out now, you know, the hashtag we want to play has become a thing for college football players. I think most of the players do want to play. If they make the decision to shut it down this college football season this fall, I don't know if spring, you know, they're gonna pay lip service to doing it in the spring. If they do it in the spring, it'd be an intriguing product. It'd be a little watered down because I think most of the guys who are the top tippy-top players will have left to go get ready for the NFL draft. Maybe it won't affect ratings or anything like that because they'll have the spring all to themselves, and most of the fans are rooting for laundry more than they are particular players. They root for the jerseys on the back. But, Seth, if there's no college football this fall and there's no college football in the spring, there are going to be athletic programs that get wiped out like a virus going through that athletic department in a way. I mean, there are going to be Olympic sports that get decimated at big schools with big programs in those sports. Because
now, how so? Do you mean like long term? Like they're just going to be wiped out? They don't exist?
Yes.
Why?
Yes. Because these schools are not going to get. I mean, we're talking tens of millions of dollars in stadium money and TV money that these schools aren't going to get if there's not a football season. Mm-hmm. The University of Wisconsin, Barry Alvarez said we're already even with having games with no fans in the stands, we're going to lose $60 million this year. If we have no games, if we have no football, and we get no TV money, we're going to lose $100 million as an athletic department.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all of them, but I'm saying it's going to hit some of these places hard.
Like it's going to hit them hard, but it's not like Wisconsin's not going to figure out a way to have football next year.
No. I said Olympic sports. I said Olympic sports. You know, like the track and the soccer and the golf. Basically, everything that's not basketball and football.
Yeah, I mean, but those are already cash flow negative sports.
Exactly.
Anyway. It's not like they're right. I guess I don't know. We'll see. We'll see about that. I mean, they don't make money on it, so it's not like they're losing out on profits or anything. And the budgets. So the money that they would have spent on like when they spend money on travel and all of those things in those sports, they're running their cash flow negative. I mean, they're not making money on it. So I feel like they're saving money in some respects too. I guess I don't know. I would be really, really surprised at this point if, like, at Division One schools that they don't have these sports just because of this one year.
Well, but they're losing money, but it's the money from football that's paying to actually run what's already a losing operation. Now you got revenue coming in.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like that's what I'm saying. Not all schools. Some will dig into the what you call it, the endowment. The dowry. They're not.
Well, yeah, no, endowments have gotten just absurdly large. Let's see. University of Wisconsin's endowment is $3.15 billion.
Okay.
$3.15 billion. It's college. Honestly, there's a part of me, Sean. I'm so disgusted with how college tuition has risen so far above and beyond the levels of inflation and just this subsidized bubble that we've built for ourselves in academics over this last 20 years.
Yeah.
It's pathetic. It's not just athletics. It's the entire it's this entire racket. So, all right, you've built up billions and billions of dollars in endowment. Go ahead and use it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then at least then you can justify some of the ridiculous crap that's been going
on. Yeah, no, I'm all for that. I just don't know that they will. That's the thing. I'm all for it. Next headline, Kenny Stills. This happened on Friday afternoon, so we didn't get to talk about this on Friday, Seth. Kenny Stills to the non-football illness list. Now, there's the non-football injury list, and there's the non-football illness list. And I think what needs to be pointed out is the non-football illness list is separate from the COVID reserve list. There's all these lists. There's the PUP, and there's the NFI, and there's the other NFI, and now the COVID list. Kenny Stills, I've not seen a report as to what's put him on this list. He remains on the roster being on that list. Kenny Stills, look, I hope it's nothing serious. I hope he's back. Mostly as a human being, I hope he's back, but certainly as the third or fourth wide receiver on this team, the depth in the wide receiver room is something that has me excited about this team.
This is the kind of thing that I think in a normal year, what happens with stuff like this is if you don't hear any news about it, you just assume it's something little, like maybe he's sick or maybe he sprained his ankle playing volleyball or something. And people don't think too much about it until all of a sudden the games start to count. But this year, since there's nothing to watch in practice or anything else, you notice this stuff. And then especially with Kenny. Look, Kenny Stills has had an active last couple months. He's been very involved in his social justice issues. But I don't know if I would start pushing the panic button or anything on some of these guys. You know, I get nervous about Dylan Cole just because he is coming off of an ACL.
Right.
But they're, like, lately, the Texans have been very, very careful with guys coming off of injuries. They've rolled them into it slowly. So I'm guessing that that's all it is with Dylan Cole, or I'm hoping that's all it is. Kenny Stills, we'll keep an eye on this and see if any more news comes out.
Indeed, we will keep an eye on it. We will be covering Texans training camp from pillar to post here on Sports Radio 610. And it starts today. Training camp going on right now for the Texans. We will keep you apprised of everything. I'll be making appearances on In the Loop and Clinton Show throughout training camp. I'm heading out there today to get COVID tested. Next headline, Seth, if listeners out there didn't stay up fairly late last night for a work/school night, you missed the greatest performance that Austin Rivers has put forth in a Rocket uniform. No Eric Gordon last night, no Russell Westbrook. He's still being rested with the quad injury. James Harden was great once again, but the big story in last night's 129-112 win over the Sacramento Kings, Austin Rivers was splashing, man. He had 41 points, a career high. Mike D'Antoni said, we've got a pretty deep team.
I mean, we got some good players. We're pretty deep. We get Russell and Eric back. We have nine guys that'll probably rotate in and out, so you know, the defense that we want to play and the face that we want to play at, we'll need about nines. So it's good to know that we can count on those guys.
Ben McLemore was great again last night, Seth. My theory with Ben McLemore is this. He is the hottest shooter in the bubble right now. Ben McLemore is here are his 3-point shooting numbers in the bubble. 4-for-4, 3-for-7, 2-for-4, 5-for-10, 6-for-14. He's shooting 51% from 3-point range in the bubble. I would say Ben McLemore is the only player in the NBA who hopes that the pandemic goes on forever so they play in the bubble forever and he gets a max deal out of it.
Well, I think that at least part of this too is that because they're playing small ball, it's forced D'Antoni into trusting more guys, right? And now part of that is Russell Westbrook and Eric Gordon's injuries have allowed that too. But you're at a point now where you've got a nine guy rotation that you trust, do you not? Between Jeff Green, Ben McLemore, Austin Rivers going off last night, and you're starting to see how are you going to make small ball work? How are you going to be able to actually physically endure through all of this? Well, having nine guys that can play goes a long way towards that, including Austin Rivers being able to make plays off the dribble. He doesn't typically get to make a whole lot of plays off the dribble because Russell Westbrook and James Harden tend to dribble the ball a lot on this team, which is fine. But as you get into the playoffs and as you're trying to grab little doses of breaks for James Harden and for Russell Westbrook, or you just want to throw little wrinkles out there, man, Austin Rivers is a huge asset in this department. This will be, for everybody that's always complained about Mike D'Antoni not playing enough guys in the playoffs, I think that he has no choice but to play more guys this year. And I think it's going to work out really well because then you can keep that tempo up offensively, but you can also play defense. That's where just slowly but surely it feels like you're starting to get more consistent defensive efforts. You're getting better communication. You still want four quarters of it. We're still waiting to see that. But this game yesterday, I think, when things were going rough, instead of just depending on bailing themselves out with points, they buckled down on defense, and that was what the difference
was. Yeah, the parts are all interchangeable, Seth. Other than P.J. Tucker, you're talking about a team full of wings that all can, you know, handle the ball a little bit. They all can shoot. I mean, Harden, Westbrook, Gordon when he's healthy, Daniel House, McLemore, Green, Rivers. I'm sure I'm missing somebody in that whole mix. But, it's a bunch of interchangeable parts. It's pretty exciting, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Somebody on the text line says, the depth perception is different without fans, so shooters are all on fire. I believe it was Terrence Ross that tweeted about it.
Okay.
I wonder if it's, at least it's very much more consistent, right? And they're playing in a limited number of venues. So the sight lines are more, maybe the sight lines are more consistent and you don't have all of that. I've never played in front of 25,000 screaming fans, so I don't know exactly what the difference is. Sean, all of my basketball experience has been played in front of empty gyms.
Yeah. That's the real shame of the whole thing.
That's well, in empty gyms or just, at parks or whatever.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.